Welcome to the Care What You Wear podcast. I'm your host, Jermaine Caprio, and in this episode, I speak with two fearless sisters, Sasha and Natalie Myers, who are sailing across the oceans on the sailboat their father built 35 years ago. I caught up with them while they were docked in the Bahamas. The Wi-Fi was a little glitchy, and you may hear their traveling puppy companions, Freya and Luca, in the background, but that won't distract you from the stories they share and their observations about the impact human behavior is having on our oceans. These two are pretty badass, and I think you'll have a lot of respect for what they do and how brave they are to be sailing the same course their father sailed so many years before them. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hey, Sasha and Natalie, welcome to the Care What You Wear podcast.
Hey, hello. Thanks for having us.
Yes. Sure. So I'm so curious to hear how you have been living on a boat for how long now? Since when did you start living on your boat?
I would say, well, we left for the Bahamas January 8th. So I would say probably almost seven months.
Okay. And that's a really long time. I mean,
yeah, it's a decent amount of time for sure.
So what inspired you to start this journey?
Yeah. So the boat our dad had built 35 years ago in Taiwan, which is over in the Pacific. And he sailed it around there for 5 years, just exploring. And he met our mom out there. And then he sailed the boat back to the States. They got married. They had us. So growing up, they had originally wanted to do this trip that we're doing right now with us as kids. But with work and everything going on, it never happened. So we had always heard these stories of our dad sailing in the Pacific. And we're like, hey, you know, why don't we finish college, finish our degrees, and then why don't we go take the boat sailing in the Caribbean and then see where it goes from there? Our dad had a bunch of maps in our basement in Michigan where we grew up. And we always saw, like, you know, we always asked him, what path did you take? Where'd you go? This is amazing, you know? And it just inspired us to want to go and do it ourselves.
That's totally cool. So you started in January of 2021.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When COVID was still pretty, it still is, but I mean, it was still pretty intense then. It was kind of pre-vaccine era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now that you're out there, tell me about your past. Where have you been since January?
So in January, we left Key West and we sailed to Bimini. Since Bimini, we've been through the Exumas, to the Southern Bahamas, Georgetown, Conception Key, which is a marine preserve, right?
Yeah,
Marine sanctuary. A week and a half ago, we actually just got back from the Dominican Republic. So that was a huge trip. We started in the Bahamas and then we had to pass through the Turks. Turks and Caicos. We didn't touch land there because obviously we were just passing through. And then we ended up in the Dominican Republic and we're there for about a month exploring the jungles. And it was just
waterfalls.
Totally different from the Bahamas, but still an amazing experience. And it was our longest sail yet. So it pushed what we thought we could do, and we really did it well. So
that's great. You know, you have a YouTube channel, and in
you just
your
hit 20K.
Congratulations! So in your opening of every video that you guys share, you say we are two sisters with few fears, great ambition, ready to take on the world one ocean at a time. I got to be honest with you; I'm not sure I could get on a boat and, you know, survive for a day, much less 6-7 months so far.
Yeah.
You say you have few fears. Is that true? I mean, has anything really scared you since you started your voyage?
We prepared ourselves for some things that could happen along the way, but we've come across engine troubles, water coming in the boat, heavier weather, dragging anchor, and then crossing an ocean where we had 100 miles between one point of land to the next, which was the longest point for us so far. And honestly, like, there's been a few times where we've maybe been a little nervous, but nothing that's ever scared us. And
nervous in terms of like more being comfortable, not nervous in terms of like, we know the boat can handle it. The boat has been through so much, you know, and it's, we've seen what it can do. Having the dogs on board, I guess we're a little nervous for them. But in terms of ourselves, it's not so much nervous in terms of safety. It's just nervousness in terms of,
there's a lot of moving parts. Yeah. And you know, you want everything to work every time you do a crossing. And so you really hope that everything goes well. And so far we've been lucky and everything's gone well. And we've had some great crossings. Mm-hmm. The last from the Dominican Republic back to the Bahamas was a little rough, but we managed, and it was definitely a learning experience for us, which was cool. But no, nothing that scared us.
Yeah.
You know, we solve it as it comes.
That's amazing. So when you travel, are you alone, just your boat without any companion boats, or do you pick up companions along the way that kind of might be going to the same location?
Well, actually this trip has been incredible with the people that we've met. When we sailed to the Bahamas, we had the intention of meeting up with some friends that we had met last year leaving the Bahamas. So we met up with them a couple weeks in, and then from there we met another boat. So we met Not a Clue in Staniel Key in the Exumas. And then we met a boat called Spirit Animal with Ben and Raph. And then we had some other friends on a boat called C'est La Vie, who do a lot of spearfishing or pole spearing and stuff. So we met with them in Southern Bahamas. What was really cool is we just stuck together, and most of us have been sailing together now for 4 or 5 months. It's definitely made that feel, you know, you have people to back you up in case something happens. Everyone has extra parts, so you're always like, oh, or willing to help if you have an issue that you can't solve. So it's been awesome being able to sail with friends, and we're just such like a close-knit group of people and get along really well, and we have a great time together.
Yeah. I'd say the longest time that we were alone was maybe like 2 days max.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we there's not many times, and when some friends do leave, we somehow manage to make new friends, and then we're not alone again, you know. So
yeah,
it all works out really, really well.
As a mother of daughters the same age as you two, I would be relieved to know that you weren't out in the middle of the ocean totally by yourselves. It's kind of comforting to know that you might. So is it nature that brings the biggest challenges, or is it humans? Like, do humans cause any problems for you? Like where you might go to the Dominican Republic and come across some sort of crazy political thing. Have you run into any of that? Or is it mainly nature that kind of poses the biggest challenge?
I mean, it's not even really nature. Like, we look at the weather like it's gonna happen, you know, whether it's a storm. When it rains, it cleans the boat. When it storms, we just make sure that the anchor holds well. We haven't really ran into too many problems. Obviously there's problems here and there with whether or not we want to go somewhere or whether or not we want to do something, you know. But there's not really drama in terms of that. When we went to the DR, I'd say the biggest road blocking we had was language. There was a big language barrier.
Oh, yeah.
We tried learning our Spanish, but we learned just enough and were able to get over that pretty well. But
I think a lot of people cruise, and once you escape that, you know, you're not really like in the political game. You know, there's not a lot going on when you're cruising. You don't know much of what's going on in the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say politics. Clearing in is a thing, you know, when you're clearing in from country to country, that can get a little tricky depending on what's going on. And with COVID has definitely made it a little trickier, but that's definitely becoming easier with the vaccine coming out. And yeah, there haven't been too many barriers between weather and people.
When you're out there and you're sailing together, I always imagine sailing, because I do not sail, as, you know, someone's running it and I'm just sitting back having a pina colada. So
yeah.
What are your responsibilities? Do you each kind of have your set of responsibilities?
I'd say we do have our own set of responsibilities when the boat first starts. We have our places. We have to close the portholes, make sure everything is secured, which we kind of are on each other about. And then
engine check. Make sure we have hydraulic fluid in the steering. just which is all pre-sailing checks,
mm-hmm.
just so you don't mm-hmm. run across those problems as you're underway.
And mm-hmm. then when we're sailing, I mean, I'm usually the one pulling up the sails and the anchor if need be before we leave. Sasha's behind the helm, making sure that we don't hit any reefs and whatnot. Right. And then I'm the eyes. But when we're sailing, we kind of both share the responsibilities, whether it's watching our wind angles, making sure the sails are trimmed, making sure our heading is correct. You know, if we hear anything funny, making sure to see what that is.
So it definitely isn't for the physically weak.
Not at all.
And you two are former swimmers. So you both, that's how I know you, Sasha. You swam with my daughter mm-hmm. in college. But yeah. And Natalie, you swam in college as well, right?
Yes, I did. Yep.
Yeah. So you have to be in good shape, I'd imagine, to do what you're doing.
We still have our muscles, yeah, but pulling up the sails and whatnot is definitely strenuous. I mean, I breathe hard every time I finish pulling up that sail, you know, and then when you take into account when we're actually sailing, the fact that we're not level, you know, we're on a heel, so we always have to be on our toes, literally, mm-hmm. when we're walking, holding on to things, making sure we don't fall over and all that. But yeah, it's definitely not for the weak heart and body.
or mind. I mean, or I would think you just have to have like a good memory and a full checklist at all times running in your head.
That's for sure. Yeah, checklists are huge. Our mom made sure to get that in our brains before she left. She was like, checklist, girls, checklist, checklist. Oh, that was on your checklist and you forgot about it. So
yeah,
that's kind of one of the things we think about when we first start the trip, for sure.
Yeah. You've been sailing for, as you mentioned, a long time, like with your parents. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you guys know how obsessed I am with the state of the planet and what's going on with the planet. Mm-hmm. So tell me, since you started sailing with your parents, what changes have you noticed in the ocean or in sea life that might be a little disturbing?
Well, that's definitely something we've come across more recently, just pieces of plastic, garbage bags on coral,
oil on the water,
people emptying their diesel tanks in marinas, and there's definitely a lot of impacts on the environment with boating, but there's some, you know, you can always minimize that impact as well. Like, well, we're on a sailboat, so we run our engine maybe 2-3 hours for like a 10-hour sail maximum. Mm-hmm. We try to sail, you know, we try to run it maybe even 20 minutes in a 10-hour sail. So we're not using a lot of fuel. We use wind, but
solar.
But then you also come to countries like the Bahamas. They have no way of really getting rid of their garbage. So they're burning it. They're dumping it in the ocean because they have nowhere to put it, you know. And so that definitely makes a huge impact on the environment. But I think that's, like I said, the big thing is that they don't have anywhere to put it. And like in the States,
they're also not really too aware of the repercussions, you know, on the environment. People here are just not aware. And we've tried like meeting with locals and kind of sharing what we know and what they can possibly do better, whether it's through fishing, through what they do on land as well. But the people here just don't really know. They're so close to the U.S., but they're just so far away, you know.
Well, and doesn't that blow you away that after all these years that the Bahamas doesn't know what to do with their trash? It's just so unfortunate. And what's happening is it's our backyard. So they're destroying what you and I, who care about the world, you know, have to live with. It's just, I get so frustrated. You know, I'm so obsessed with the amount of plastic we all use. We single use, you know, like for our shampoo or whatever it might be. So I imagine that you guys come across a lot of plastic in the ocean. Yeah. Is it worse now than it was, I'm sure, when you were a kid?
I would say 100%. There are times when we're out freediving and it just happens to be a tide where plastic comes in with it. I mean, you see just dozens and dozens of pieces floating, just like whether it's garbage bags or just hard plastic, you know. It's unreal. There's days where it's totally clear, but then there's days where it just comes in and it's just all around you and you think,
ew,
like this has to be in everything, from the plants in the water to the fish, you know, that we eat. So it is definitely alarming. When we were younger, I mean, I remember just the bluest waters and the cleanest and just the amount of fish that we would see. It's definitely gone down a lot. Not as much as you would think, but it is definitely concerning.
Well, it depends. Here in the Bahamas, their fishing is very regulated, and we can only use pole spears to catch big fish. So mahi, wahoo, like, you know, if you want to catch those fish, you're either catching them on a rod and reel or on a pole spear. And then, of course, small reef fish as well. In the States, you can use a spear gun, and most of the other Caribbean islands you can as well. So it's, you know, there's different ways of like sustaining marine life populations. And I think the Bahamas does a very good job because of that. One sad thing we found out here is that fishermen, because they know so little about their impact on the environment, fishermen will actually use bleach to bleach coral reefs to get the lobsters out of the reef, which they don't realize what they're doing is they're killing the reef doing that, you know, because they
take a jug, stick it in the coral, and wait for the lobsters to come up belly up.
You gotta be kidding me.
No, yeah. That's something we learned this year. And Prime Minister and everybody, I don't know if it's them necessarily, but they definitely keep the rest of the smaller islands kind of like under a rock because they want to have more control over the people here. You know?
They care about the here and now. They don't care about the future and what could happen to their beautiful islands, you know?
So they're not just killing a lobster. They're killing an entire reef and a bunch of fish can't live now because they live off that reef.
Yeah.
And also, you know, when us cruisers come in, we're under a magnifying glass, you know, we're scrutinized, whether it's through fishing, what we use, where we go, but it's like all of the Bahamians, they can do whatever, whenever, and use whatever they want, you know, and which is fine because they are obviously from the Bahamas, but
they're trying to feed their families.
They are
that,
trying to feed their families, but there's a point where it is too much. And that's just, it's a bit sad to see.
Well, and what people don't realize, and I understand what you're saying about feeding their families. And I understand that, you know, that it's tough to think about like saving the lobster when you've got to feed your kids and you don't have a lot of food. But my point is that if they were environmentally friendly and taught environmental practices, they'd have an abundance of food in the future for their kids, right?
Exactly.
Like they'd help everyone.
Lobster can reproduce. There'd be way more in the long run than killing them all at once and then not having a habitat for the rest of those marine life to live in. So, you know, if they were taught the big picture versus the here and now, as Natalie said, fishing would be, I think, a lot better here. And although it already is now, but I think the locals definitely need to learn a little bit about the environment and the impact that they're making, and that in the long run, they're hurting themselves big time.
Also, so when people come to the islands, right, we thought maybe it would be a good idea to kind of, because we know a friend who wants to teach freediving to the islands, but in order to get permission to do that, it's not really possible. The islands just don't want you to do that.
They don't want you to teach. You know, like I said, it's very political. They don't want the locals to know more than the leaders are wanting them to know.
Yeah. So it's like an authoritarian rule in a way.
Oh, very, very authoritarian.
Yeah. What do you guys feel like? First, let me ask you. I know that you live off the ocean food. Mm-hmm. I know that you guys catch your own fish and then you eat your fish, right?
Yeah.
And you use the whole fish. And so how long does like a big fish like a grouper or a mahi-mahi or something sustain you?
Oh, okay. So if we were to catch a smaller mahi, we could use that for lunch and dinner, maybe 2 days, 2-3 days, stretching it. Obviously we have that with rice and beans, or we have it with veggies. But you know, lately we've kind of been feeding four people. We've been having dinners with most of our friends. So it's like one fish usually lasts a day. And I mean, try as we might not to eat when we're out free diving for 5-6 hours a day. It's hard. We eat a lot.
Well, yeah, you know, you're active. You've got to feed you've got to fuel your bodies. But you do eat what you catch, which is.
Oh, yes. Everything. Time, everything. Yeah.
And you don't catch anything just for the sport.
So certain areas, we've noticed there's a lot more fish than others. And I think that has something to do with the locals fishing as well. So sometimes we'll be out there 5-6 hours a day looking for fish and come back with one or two. And then other times we'll go out for an hour and we'll have two in that hour, you know, and we're only catching what we can eat. Mm-hmm. Or if we know we're going to be underway for a while, or like when we went to the Dominican Republic, we were trying to freeze as much fish as we could as well, because mm-hmm. we knew we weren't going to be able to fish out there. Right. So it's definitely, yeah, all the fish that we've caught, none of it has ever gone to waste. And right. we only catch what we know we can eat. So which important. Makes it very sustainable that way as well.
We even used to boil the fish heads for the dogs, but we learned that ciguatera kind of hangs out in fish heads, mainly it's like around a very the fish bad, head.
I think bacterial infection yeah. that can make people really sick. So,
so we
stay away from the heads now.
We stay away from the fish heads.
Smart. And talk about your dog.
Yeah, so we have Freya and Luca. And Freya is about, I think, 6 years old, mm-hmm. and Luca just turned 2. And they love boating, but they don't really like being underway. Luca gets a little nervous. We try to make them as comfortable as we can. Freya's, you know, she knows the drill, so she's pretty chill. We do give them CBD oil to mm-hmm. mostly Luca, just to keep him calm, because he gets very panicky, very stressed out, and the CBD helps him calm down.
Well, and yeah. I bet they're kind of a connection to land living and comfort for you guys.
Mm. Oh, for sure. And they keep us busy. So we always have something going on with them.
Busy and entertained.
Yeah.
I mean, they are our fishing pole alarms. They hear the fish reel and then they just go nuts, you know? It's really quite entertaining.
Yeah. Super cute.
God, I'm sure you have a video of them when you're fishing.
Oh, yeah. Our next video or our next episode on YouTube is actually...
It's all of them.
All of them.
So speaking of animals, now what are you seeing out there that brings you joy? I mean, if you come across, I don't know if you come across whales down there or larger fish or mammals.
No, not yet. But, dolphins is the biggest we've seen so far.
I would say every time we see dolphins, the last time we saw dolphins was crossing from the DR back to the Bahamas, and they were the tiny little
Atlantic spotted dolphins.
Yeah. And I mean, they put on a show. They were jumping, had to have been 15, 20 feet out of the water and just like in the sunset. It was gorgeous, you know, like
picture perfect.
So that's always an amazing experience. In terms of fish life, we look at most fish life like it's food. There's a decent amount of like more exotic fish that you see. Not so much where we go fishing. You see squids in the water. It's always fun to see squids. We're pretty sure it was a squid family.
What it looked like.
There were two big squids and then a bunch of teeny tiny little ones, and they were all kind of like squidding together.
So it's really cute to see that when you're out in the ocean. You're like, oh, family.
Yeah.
Oh, I love squids. They're super, super smart.
They're very interesting creatures.
They're freaky looking, but they look like aliens to me, but they're the smartest things.
Squids are amazing. And when they're in the wild, it's really awesome to observe what they do and seeing the way they change color and the way they kind of move every part together and swim. They're cool to look at for sure.
They're brilliant creatures. And the dolphins you bring up, I grew up part of my life in Florida on the Gulf side. Mm-hmm. And every day we'd go out on the water with my dad. The dolphins would come and greet us at the same place. And, you know, they just swim in our wake and come around the boat. And they're just, I swear, they're like dogs or humans in a way. They do love humans. And sadly, humans are the death of them. But what can people do to help the oceans? What can we all do to kind of help the oceans out?
I would say just mostly awareness, you know, awareness to everything that's going on.
Just being conscious of, you know, what you're using.
Yeah, the acai straws. You have the ones that are made from
the corn.
Corn. Yeah. Yep. There's so many products. But it's also not just like using those, but also being aware of why we use those. You know, people are like, why are they better than plastic? You know, people don't really look at the bigger picture with that either. They use that straw, but then the next day they go right back to doing whatever they were doing, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely consistent. It's changing your daily consistency, you know, the behavior that you do on a daily basis. And I also think it's collective effort. I say this, I think, in every podcast, but collectively, you know, switching to the acai straw or even a compostable cup or whatever it might be, if we all did it, if we all started doing that, that's when you have the impact. That's why, you know, COVID kind of gave me hope, we all kind of thought a little bit more about the planet and how we got here, I think. And it kind of gave me hope in a sick way. It's horrible people were dying, but I think it brought attention to the damage we've done, don't you, to our planet. Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, so what brings you guys hope?
I think ourselves, you know, the fact that we can live solar, that we can make our own water through solar, that we can sustainably fish, you know.
Yeah, we live super sustainably. We barely use any diesel fuel. Like I said, we try to run our engines as little as possible. So we go where the wind takes us.
Your water's made using the solar. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we have 560 watts of solar. And that's enough that we can power. We have a 4-amp water maker, so it's using salt water and making fresh water for us.
Wow.
And yeah, so we're running that off solar. So we have enough solar power to run that and create our own water. All our laptops, everything off of the solar as well. We run our refrigeration. We don't run a generator at all.
Most people we know have water makers that you need to run a generator for. However, the one we have draws such little energy and power that we are able to run it off our solar.
That's amazing. Thanks. So you really are doing all you can to be sustainable out there.
Yeah, it's definitely wonderful. The most sustainable way to live, I think, right now.
I agree. Why aren't they doing that with salt water, like on the West Coast? Or like, why don't people have solar? What do you call it for the water?
It's so easy.
Solar water makers.
It's so easy.
Yeah.
Why doesn't every home in California have something like that? I don't understand.
Well, it makes a gallon and a half an hour.
Ours
makes a gallon and a half an hour. They do make ones that make more water. But I guess it's more in terms of consumption. People look at that and they're like, how can I survive off a gallon and a half an hour? You know,
we use like 10 gallons of water a day. So we're very, very careful frugal, on our water, frugal on our water usage. We shower in the ocean, we wash our hair, and then we do a quick fresh water rinse, and that's our daily showers. You know, we're fine with it, and we're able to maintain ourselves and our lifestyle and everything that way, so why not, you know?
And it's not as if you have to, like, show up in a corporate office.
No. That might take a little bit more.
I would actually have to do my hair. Yeah. that would be difficult.
So how much longer do you plan to continue this journey?
So right now we're actually headed back to the States for the summer. We do need a lot of boat projects we have a list of things that we need to do over the summer. And then we're hoping to, we're kind of deciding on what our next plan is, but we want to leave in either October or November to head back out and sail through the Caribbean with our friends again, or we'll cross the Pacific in February.
The Eastern Caribbean, so not really the Bahamas.
Eastern Caribbean, and so just see a little bit more of the Caribbean Ocean because we haven't really made it very far this time around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But our big goal is to go circumnavigate. So whether we do it next year or we do it the following season, plenty of backups, worked all the kinks out, and then we want to go sail across the Pacific and around the world.
That's a great goal. That's very cool.
Very excited.
And you can continue sharing what you're learning and what you're doing through your YouTube channel.
Yes.
It's wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
So where can we find you guys?
You can find us at Sailing the Far Side on almost all social media platforms, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. We have a blog as well and a website. We have calendars. So we do a lot of underwater photography. So we have some fun stuff that you can find on our website as well, just to share our story and our adventures and hopefully inspire other people to do the same.
You are very fearless in my book.
thank you.
Proud to know you both, because I think you're kind of our future.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you're aware of your impact on the planet as you sail and you want to help others lower theirs. It's terrific. Thank you so much for what you're doing.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot to us.
And I just absolutely love it. And I encourage everybody to follow you on YouTube at Sailing the Far Side.
Feel free to reach out to us, anybody that's listening to the podcast as well. We love to share our stories, answer any questions you have about our lifestyle.
We answer every question. I will say that's one of our best, like what we're really on top of is answering questions, answering messages, answering comments. We are all about that.
And we love that kind of communication with the outside world.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
We hope this podcast has made you more conscious about how you're impacting the planet and that you'll visit our website, majamas.com. There you'll find our sustainable collections and links to our blog, wearemajamaseearth.com, where you can learn even more about our guests and our passion for the planet. Help us out. Follow us on Instagram and Pinterest at majamas_earth and on Facebook at majamaseearth. Care what you wear, and remember, collectively, we have the power to help the planet.